Another day dawns. The birds sing and the sky comes alight. Another week passes. The world churns and our days pass. We come back together in this circle as we do every Sunday, seeking community and consolation and inspiration. Welcome. I'm the Reverend Bob LaValle, and I'm delighted to be joined today by our worship team, our worship leader, John Eldridge, who also serves on our COVID advisory committee, and by our religious educator, Mia Noren, our senior minister, Reverend Angela, and our music director, Susan Peck, are taking well-deserved days off. Our tech team today, our DJ is Chris Paul, and we're also supported by Cy Schuster and Christine Robinson, and I'm forgetting somebody, oh, Vance, and pardon me if I've forgotten anyone, which is a shame because it's such an important thing what they do. Anyways, I'm always also delighted to introduce Warren Hayslip, our new Director of Finance and Operations. Warren comes to us with a wealth of skills and experience, most recently as Chief Financial Officer of the United Way of Piedmont, South Carolina. And Warren and his wife have been attending UU churches all over the country for years. And you can send him a hello note at the email address in the chat. And we're just so happy to welcome Warren. John has some announcements for us.
Good morning. It's great to be with you again. Catherine Pulsifer reminds us that each day is a new beginning, the chance to do with it what should be done and not to be seen simply as another day to put in time. We have three announcements this morning. First Unitarian's annual meeting will be happening on the last Sunday in January, the 31st at 2 p.m. by way of Zoom. Among other things, this is an opportunity for members of the church to vote on our budget for 2021. Mark your calendars for January 31st at 2 p.m., and we'll see you then. I'm delighted to share that at our Christmas Eve service, we raised more than $1,800 for our food pantry. This is a generous church, and we are grateful for our support of our work on behalf of our vulnerable neighbors. Are you new around here? Or are you a church member who would love to welcome our visitors? Please join our Director of Membership and Communications, Lara Magnuson, for an informal chat after worship today. No need to join a separate meeting, just stay in the worship meeting after the breakout rooms have started. Those are our announcements. Let's work together to make ours a great day.
Let's light our chalices. We kindle this chalice as we kindle our imaginations, dreaming of a better world, a better church, and a better way of being. May our dreams be realized. Come. Let us worship together.
I believe in being ready. I believe in being ready. I believe in being ready, for the time is drawing near. Thank you. the time is drawing near.
We are Unitarian Universalists. We are a people of faith with open minds, loving hearts, and helping hands.
Good morning. I'm Mia Noren, the Director of Religious Education here at First Unitarian. Today is the Sunday before Martin Luther King Jr. Day, but I'm not going to talk about King. Today, I'm going to share a story with you about children, one that will help you imagine a time, 1964, in our country's deep South. The American South had long been a place where Black Americans couldn't drink from the same drinking fountains as white people, attend the same schools, or enjoy the same public areas. Then the Civil Rights Act of 1964 became law and stated that all persons shall be entitled to the full and equal enjoyment of any public place, regardless of race, color, religion, or national origin. The author of our story was born a white child in Mobile, Alabama. When the Civil Rights Act was passed, the town pool in Mobile closed. So did the roller rink and the ice cream parlor. Rather than lawfully give Blacks the same rights and freedoms as whites, many Southern businesses chose to close their doors in protest. Some of them closed forever. Also in the summer of 1964, civil rights workers in Mississippi organized Freedom Summer, a movement to register Black Americans to vote. It was a time of great racial violence and change. That was the summer our author, a child of about 10 years old, began to pay attention. She noticed that Black people had used back doors, were waited on only after every white person had been helped, and were treated poorly, all because of the color of their skin. No matter what any law said, she realized that a white person openly having a Black friend and vice versa could be a dangerous thing. She couldn't get these thoughts and images out of her mind and wondered what it must be like to be a Black child her own age. She dreamed about changing things and yet wondered what any child, Black or white, could do. Almost 60 years later, we and our children are still watching and wondering. Many of us are working to learn more about how to put an end to the racism that still exists. You may know that we Unitarian Universalists are considering a proposed eighth principle. The children's version says, we must work together for diversity and against racism and oppression. Freedom Summer by Deborah Wiles, illustrated by Jerome Lagarin. John Henry Waddell is my best friend. His mama works for my mama. Her name is Annie Mae. We let the cats in and then chase the cats out of the house until Annie Mae says, shoo, enough of you two, go play. We shoot marbles in the dirt until we're too hot to be alive. Then we yell, last one in is a rotten egg, and run straight for Fiddler's Creek. John Henry swims better than anybody I know, but he doesn't swim in the town pool with me. He's not allowed. So we dam up the creek with rocks and sticks to make a swimming spot, then holler and jump in, wearing only our skin. John Henry's skin is the color of brown butter. My skin is the color of the pale moths that dance around the porch light at night. We churn that water into a white hurricane and laugh until our sides hurt. Then we float on our backs and spout like whales. We have 2 nickels for ice pops, so we put our clothes on and walk to town. John Henry doesn't come with me through the front door of Mr. Mason's general store. He's not allowed. How you doing, young Joe? Asks Mr. Mason. He winks and says, you gonna eat these all by yourself? My heart does a quick beat. I got one for a friend, I say, and scoot out the door. I love ice pops, says John Henry. Me too, I say. Annie Mae makes dinner for my family every night. Daddy stirs his iced tea and says the town pool opens tomorrow to everybody under the sun, no matter what color. That's the new law, Mama tells me. She helps my plate with peas and says, it's the way it's gonna be now, everybody together. Lunch counters, restrooms, drinking fountains too. I gotta be excused, I shout, and I run into the kitchen to tell John Henry. I'm going to swim in the town pool, he hollers. Is it deep? Real deep, I tell him, and the water's so clear, you can jump to the bottom and open your eyes and still see. Let's be the first ones there, says John Henry. I'll bring my good luck nickel and we can dive for it. Next morning, as soon as the sun peeks into the sky, here comes my best friend, John Henry Waddell, running to meet me. Let's go, he yells. I got my nickel, and I run right with him all the way to the town swimming pool. We race each other over the hill, and we stop. County dump trucks are here. They grind and back up to the empty pool. Workers rake steaming asphalt into the hole where sparkling clean water used to be. One of them is John Henry's big brother, Will Rogers. He sees us and points back on down the road. It means get on home. But our feet feel stuck. We can't budge. So we hunker in the tall weeds and watch all morning until the pool is filled with hot, spongy tar. Smoky steam rises in the air. Will Rogers heaves his shovel into the back of an empty truck and climbs up with the other workers. His face is like a storm cloud, and I know this is a job that has made him angry. Let's go, a boss man shouts, and the trucks rumble slam down the road. It's so quiet now, we can hear the breeze whisper through the grass. We sit on the diving board and stare at the tops of the silver ladders sticking up from the tar. My heart beats hard in my chest. John Henry's voice shakes. White folks don't want colored folks in their pool. Let's go back to Fiddler's Creek, I say. I don't want to swim in this old pool anyway. John Henry's eyes fill up with angry tears. I did, he says. I wanted to swim in this pool. I want to do everything you can do. I don't know what to say, but as we walk back to town, my head starts to pop with new ideas. I want to go to the dairy dip with John Henry, sit down and share root beer floats. I want us to go to the picture show, buy popcorn and watch the movie together. I want to see this town with John Henry's eyes. We stop in front of Mr. Mason's store. I jam my hands into my pockets while my mind searches for words to put with my new ideas. My fingers close around two nickels. Want to get an ice pop? John Henry wipes his eyes and takes a breath. I want to pick it out myself, he says. I swallow hard and my heart says yes. Let's do that, I say. I give John Henry one of my nickels. He shakes his head. I got my own. We look at each other, then we walk through the front door together.
Let's pause the chat for a few moments during our meditation and prayer, and we'll turn the chat back on during our sharing of joys and sorrows. So let's find a comfortable position, take a few deep breaths. Our minds are like the sky. From our position on the surface of the earth, we may see clouds or fog or rain. Just like the sky, our minds may be muddied by the constant tumult of thoughts. But above the clouds, the sun is always shining and all is serene. That's also the case with our minds. At their core, Our minds have a quiet space, a space untouched by turmoil. Let's take a few moments to connect to that space. We'll sit together in silence for 2 minutes.
We have reached that moment in our service when we as a community share our joys and our concerns. Sharing either your joys or concerns together gives us an opportunity to support one another. Please use the chat bar for this sharing. If you're not able to write in the chat bar, please contact the church office or send an email to caring@uuabq.org. Please share first your joys, followed by your concerns, as prompted in the chat box. Thank you.
When we share our joys and concerns, we journey together, offering assistance, receiving help, knowing that we are seeing and being seen. We see so many joys, joys for the sun and love and this gathered community. We lift up with celebration the one-year anniversary of Carla and Sarah, who got married in the social hall. Remember that? Feels like a lifetime ago. Congratulations, Carla and Sarah. Joy for the vaccine and people receiving it, and walks in the Bosque. Joy for our first female vice president, and joy for democracy. And we have concerns, real concerns now. A divided country, divided realities. Concern for the safety during this transition. Struggles with COVID, struggles with so much, the economy. All these we lift up to the great powers of celebration, of healing, of renewal, known by many names. Will you join me in prayer? We mourn together the passing of Don New after a long illness. May his family and loved ones be comforted by their memories of him, and may light perpetual shine upon him. We pray for Sally New as she grieves, and also as she recovers from ankle surgery. May she know that this congregation lifts her up in their hearts. We mourn the passing of Janelle Campbell on Christmas Eve. An online memorial service for Janelle is planned for Saturday, January 23rd at 10 a.m. For information on how to attend, email caring@uuabq.org. That's caring@uuabq.org. We hold her loved ones in our hearts, and she will be dearly missed. May her many contributions to the life of this congregation shine on for us. Today we celebrate with Pat Diem and John Barber, who were married on January 13th. May their days together be filled with laughter, their years filled with faith, and their time together, their lifetime together, filled with love. In this time of turning and change, may we see justice and compassion across this land. May truth be told so we may be reconciled. And as this pandemic marches on, we pray for all those who keep us living, the healthcare professionals, the educators, the people who keep our food chain going, and so many more. May we find strength as the weariness of this long siege takes its toll. We remember all those who have become sick or have died, and we pray for healing and comfort everywhere. We give thanks for this Unitarian Universalist Church. May we continue to journey together in wisdom. And may we all be held in the heart of love. Peace be with you.
I am waking up to find my world between the dying and being reborn. I see what is, and I see what could be. Can't close my eyes again and go back to sleep. Fill my days with blessed unrest, and my nights with dreams of justice. Make me a vessel for the turning of the tide. Fill my days with blessed unrest, and my nights with dreams of justice. Make me a vessel for the turning of the tide. How can I change our course? Just a lonely voice. Wish I could lose myself in all the noise. But if we all would rise, a generation proud, then with a mighty song, we could turn this world around. So, fill my days with blessed unrest, and my nights with dreams of justice. Make me a vessel for the turning of the tide. Fill my days with blessed unrest, and my nights with dreams of justice. Make me a vessel for the turning of the tide. Ancestors all behind, and before me every child. Ancestors all behind, before me every child. Ancestors all behind, and before me every child. I bring the power of a long, unbroken line. So when our time is through, I want to know we did what we came to do. For the future ones, so in our darkest days, may we all be strong and give our lives so life may go on. Fill my days with blessed unrest, and my nights with dreams of justice. Make me a vessel for the turning of the tide. Fill my days with blessed unrest, and my nights with dreams of justice. Make me a vessel for the turning of the tide. Fill my days with blessed unrest, and my nights with dreams of justice. Make me a vessel for the turning of the tide. Fill my days with blessed unrest, and my nights with dreams of justice. Make me a vessel for the turning of the tide. For the turning of the tide. For the turning of the tide.
This morning's reading is titled Invitation to Brave Space, and it's written by Mickey Scott Bay Jones. Together we will create brave space, because there is no such thing as safe space. We exist in the real world. We all carry scars, and we all have caused wounds. In this space, we seek to turn down the volume of the outside world. We amplify voices that fight to be heard elsewhere. We call each other to more truth and to more love. We have the right to start somewhere and continue to grow. We have the responsibility to examine what we think we know. We will not be perfect. This space will not be perfect. It will not always be what we wish it to be, but it will be our brave space together. And we will work on it side by side.
On May 17th, 1954, the Supreme Court of the United States issued a decision on the case of Brown versus the Board of Education of Topeka, Kansas. In that decision, they unanimously found that state-mandated segregation of schools by race was unconstitutional. Of course, that wasn't the end of segregation in this country. 2 years after that decision, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King gave a speech in New York City talking about desegregation and the future. In that speech, he talked about three reasons why segregation is evil. First, it inevitably leads to discrimination. Second, segregation scars the souls of both the segregated and the segregator. And third, it's evil because it depersonalizes the segregated. The segregated person becomes something to be used, not a person to be respected. MLK had a deep sense of what segregation does, and it informed his and many others' amazing work to break down segregation wherever it occurred. He and his peers did an amazing amount to make the U.S. more just. For example, they organized the Montgomery bus boycott in 1956 that led to the Supreme Court ruling that segregation on public buses was unconstitutional. Eventually, through much blood, sweat, and tears, some wrongs were reversed with the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. These acts were attempts to remove segregation from the practices and policies of states and from the practices and policies of boards of election across the country. And in order to break down segregation, Martin Luther King preached a message that at heart, we are all alike and our skin color shouldn't matter ever. The most moving example of this was from his I Have a Dream speech, which he delivered to thousands at the 1963 March on Washington. And here's the big line. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. Don't judge the color of their skin. Martin Luther King's focus was appropriate to his time, and his message was appropriate to his time. Segregation was evil, and it needed to stop. It's a new time now, though, and the thinking that helped make such amazing changes is less useful now. Now, before I get into that, I want to explain an acronym that I'll be using The acronym is BIPOC, or the version I prefer is BIOPOC, B-I-O-P-O-C. BIOPOC stands for Black, Indigenous, and Other People of Color. And it's an attempt to refer in shorthand to non-white folks in a way that also accounts for their differences within that group, their differing ethnicities and experiences and circumstances. So back to why Dr. King's focus and strategy was right and powerful for his times, but doesn't work as well for us now. In order to accomplish what the civil rights leaders of that era needed to accomplish, they needed to focus on the message that we are all, at heart, alike, that our experiences are the same, and that seeing skin color, acknowledging difference, were practices to be avoided. Unfortunately, the unintended legacy of Dr. King's desegregation work is the hangover of color blindness as a virtue. In 2021, color blindness is not a virtue. A more specific word for color blindness is minimization. Minimization is when we level differences between different cultures. It's saying, simplistically, we're all human after all, and things like respect and hard work mean the same thing for everybody wherever they come from. It's really a way of sidestepping race entirely, erasing the experience of BIPOC folks. Taken to its extreme, it's a convenient way of dismissing folks who raise concern about racism. You know, one particularly egregious minimization tactic that I sometimes hear is used by some conservative commentators when they accuse anti-racist activists of actually being racist themselves, because these activists insist on talking about race and the reality of racism. The commentators say, "You're a racist because you keep talking about race. Why is it always about race with you?" Which it never is. But for some folks, any amount of conversation about race is too much. So you can see the problem with minimization. No one can minimize, no one can be colorblind when BIPOC folks are still experiencing systemic discrimination on the one hand and microaggressions on the other. Oh, and if folks are not familiar with that term, microaggressions, I can explain it using Kevin Nadal's description. Microaggressions are defined as the everyday, subtle, intentional, and oftentimes unintentional interactions or behaviors that communicate some sort of bias towards historically marginalized groups. My BIPOC ministers' friends talk about congregants saying to them, "You're so articulate," as if someone with a master's in divinity and 3 years in the pulpit wouldn't already be pretty articulate. You know, I have a preacher friend who uses a wheelchair, and folks will come up to her unprompted after worship and say, "I'm so proud of you." And my friend would joke, "Proud for what? Putting on trousers?" Now, the funny, not funny thing about this is that the folks who are listening to this sermon, who are part of marginalized groups, need no explanation of microaggressions. For them, it's a part of life. And unfortunately, it's also a part of church. Minimization and microaggressions do show up in our congregation. So how do we overcome minimization? To start, all of us need to become aware of our own social location and cultural identity. That means acknowledging our blind spots and our sore spots that our particular life experience has given us. And we also need to accept that there are other valuable ways of perceiving the world. And we need to acknowledge the ways that oppression exists in systems right now, in laws, in how justice is administered, in how healthcare is given, in how children are taught, really everywhere throughout our society. It also means letting people be multifaceted and not assuming their passions, where their passions lie, just because of how they present themselves. So a person's soul might be fed actually by poetry, not anti-racism. That also means understanding and acknowledging intersectionality, which is another one of these jargony words. Intersectionality is the understanding of how our different identities add up and come together. So it's one thing to be a woman and white, or a woman and Hispanic, or Hispanic and disabled. We are all so much more than just one label. Intersectionality is actually really beautiful because it allows folks to be three-dimensional, to be fully human, not a stereotype. Isn't that how we all want to be seen, as fully human? And here's an important point. This is not meant to be a critique of what folks accomplished during the civil rights movements of the 50s and 60s. I know that there are some folks around now who were active in the civil rights movement back then, and they have mixed feelings about where they are now, or where we are now as a society. They may even feel some guilt or regret for not doing enough. I think I understand the heartbreak that some folks may feel. We're not where we need to be right now, that's for sure. But every generation has their task, and then must pass the baton to the next. What that teaches us is that the work is slow and will take literally generations. It's a statement that the work is never done and must constantly evolve to fit the times. But the lesson is, if we don't examine our minimization stories, our faith formation, individually and as a congregation and as a movement, will be stuck. We are not a segregated church at First U. We are, right this very minute, a multicultural church, and it's a beautiful thing. And we are a healthy church, and that is a beautiful thing. And we can do better. We can do better. And we can draw an example from our ancestors. And here's a story from the 40s, I think, that informs us now. So in 1948, most houses of worship in the United States were segregated by race. Some were segregated by law, others were segregated by custom, or just not trying to welcome and include all people. So the First Unitarian Society of Chicago, which is a big church in Chicago, was one of these congregations. And although their church was located in a neighborhood with many African Americans, it was right by the University of Chicago campus, still is. Although there were many African Americans in the neighborhood, only whites could join. And this was according to the written bylaws of the church and according to custom. It was written into their bylaws. But eventually the congregation realized that they really wanted to live truly into their values and principles. The minister was ready for this change, and so was James Luther Adams. And I'm laughing because this is my second straight week of referencing James Luther Adams, or JLA, as the cool kids in seminary like to say. JLA wanted to move forward. Dr. Adams, JLA, taught at the Meadville Lombard Theological School, my alumnus, which at the time was right across the street from the First Unitarian Society of Chicago. And he was a member of that congregation's board of directors. He was a leader in that congregation. So along with some others, Reverend Pennington, who was serving the church at that time, and JLA, proposed a change in the church's bylaws to desegregate the church and welcome people, whatever the color of their skin. They wanted to include, not exclude. They saw this as a way to put their love into action. When the congregation's board of directors considered the desegregation proposal, most of them supported it. However, one member of the board objected. He said, "Your new program is making desegregation into a creed. you are asking everyone in this church to say that they believe inviting people of color to attend church here is a good way to tackle racism. What if some members of the church don't believe this? Well, a debate ensued. Both sides felt in their hearts that their belief was right. And you know, to that board of director, that director's credit, we are a non-creedal denomination. We don't tell people what to believe. And that's an important part of who we are. So don't agree with him, but he's got a point. Well, anyways, perhaps that during this long debate, they were so busy trying to be heard, they forgot to listen. So they kept on talking and talking and talking. And the debate went on in the board of directors meeting until the early hours of the morning. Everyone was exhausted. They were frustrated. But finally, James Luther Adams remembered that we should be listening twice as much as talking. And he asked a question. He asked the person who had voiced the strongest objection, "What do you say is the purpose of this church? What do you say is the purpose of this church?" Suddenly, everyone was listening. Everyone wanted to hear how this stuck board member was gonna respond. Well, the board member who opposed opening the church to BIPOC folks finally replied. He said, "Okay, Jim, the purpose of this church is to get hold of people like me and change them. To get hold of people like me and change them." And that's when the First Unitarian Society of Chicago successfully desegregated. This story reminds me of the beautiful reminder that racial justice work lies at the intersection of learning and healing. Learning and healing. And it's a reminder to all of us that the thing that makes Unitarian Universalism so special is our affirmation of the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and also our celebration of difference. Difference in theology, of course, because we're non-creedal, but difference in identity too. The groundwork is already laid for us to be radically welcoming, even more so than we are now. My prayer for this congregation, for myself, is that we can more deeply live into our values and see everyone in their full humanity, exposed as they are to injustice and indifference, and also beautiful for what they carry and what they can do. May it be so, and blessed be.
We take our offering with the following insights by the Buddhist teacher Satyalila, who tells us that there's a famous quote by Marianne Williamson: "Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us." Satyalila continues, "Imagination is a key to these great energies. And the reason why imagination is vital to the spiritual life is that if we don't use it, it will use us. If we don't use our imagination, our imaginations will use us. If we don't guard our imagination, it can be captured when we are unaware. Consumerism plays on this. Advertising and marketing executives are paid a lot of money to capture our imagination." To make your offering, please click on the link posted in the chat or go to the church website. You also can write a check and send it to the church. Our Change for the Future recipient this quarter is Sage ABQ. Sage ABQ provides support for older LGBTQ people in the Albuquerque metropolitan area through advocacy, social programs, education, support groups, and resource distribution. They counter isolation, fear, and loneliness by creating a caring community of LGBTQ elders who will look out for each other. And now we gratefully receive your offering.
What is generously given is received in gratitude. Thank you on behalf of First Unitarian Church and Sage Albuquerque. So as we approach the end of today's service, I want to remind you that everyone is invited to stay for coffee hour in our breakout rooms. If you'd like to talk to other congregants, just stay on the call after the credits are over. And if you'd like to join the New to First U meeting, if you're relatively new to our community or just want to say hello to new folks, please stay in the lobby instead of going to the first round of breakout rooms. Once everyone has moved into the regular breakout rooms, you'll be placed in a special breakout room for New to First Unitarian. And for everyone, I offer this question as a conversation starter. What helps you to be seen as a complete person in your full humanity? What helps you to be seen as a complete person in your full humanity? I'll put that in the chat. Let's extinguish our chalices. May we fill our days with blessed unrest and our nights with dreams of justice. May we be a vessel for the turning of the tide. Go in peace, gentle people, and practice radical love.